Revelation 2, verse 17. I will give him a white stone, and upon the stone a new name written which no one yet knows, but he that receives it. Well, there was apparently a custom of writing a name on a stone, breaking the stone in half at random, and each friend keeping one half. So the half stone would only fit exactly with the other half stone. So when the friends met in the future, they'd fit the stones together as a kind of proof of their earlier relationship. So we're being told then that we are going to have some very, very personal relationship between us and Jesus, which no one else knows but he who receives it, that is, in that sense, unenterable. And that is, to me, very attractive. The Son of God loved me and gave himself for me, Paul could say. That is how we feel, and that is how it is. Now, of course, it is a mystery that he can have that intimacy with you and with me, that he can have that totally personal relationship. But it is, in fact, absolutely possible that there is no reason why this should not be the case, that he can have that totally intimate relationship with me as well as with you. And I know something of him that you don't, and you know something of him that I don't. That is the nature, I suppose, of relationships. And yet we'll be given a name. And what is that new name that we will be given that nobody else can quite enter into? Well, a name was understood as a summary of your character, of your personality, of your history. So, for example, we're told that Yahweh made himself a name when he, for example, historically redeemed Israel from Egypt, when he did this, that, and the other. He made himself a name. He declared that name to Moses. It was his characteristics. So a name is something that reflects a person's history, a person's accumulated character, personality, what they've done in their life, etc. And you can see that in the way that Bible characters are given, as it were, little comments that stick to them as if they're a name. Jeroboam, who made Israel sin. Judas, the betrayer, etc. And in fact, some of the names that you see people were given in the Old Testament, I'm pretty sure they weren't their birth names. They are names that they acquired that reflected that person's character, behavior, life history, etc. And that's why it's quite clear as you work through the genealogies in Chronicles that folks had quite a number of names and were known by different names. The point is that the name that we will be given is the summary of who we essentially are. And so the salvation that the Bible speaks about is so intensely personal that I personally shall be saved. And what does that mean, that Duncan will be saved? Well, I, as the unique person I am, just as unique as you, will be eternally saved. I shall be, as it were, preserved. And yet, who am I? Who are you? Who is a person? They are the summary of all their life experiences. And it's so tragic in death that all that a person went through is apparently now at an end and is sort of irretrievably lost. And yet the resurrection of the body, which we know will come, is not simply a physical resurrection of the body. We are being reformed as persons and saved eternally. The Bible does not speak of an immortal soul in the sense that we have no personal conscious existence after we are dead, but we do also read about the spirits of just men who have been made perfect. We read about souls or persons or spirits under the altar in Revelation, crying out for justice. I think it is true to say that, as Jesus himself observes, all live, all the righteous live unto God in his eyes. In that sense, God is the God of Abraham. He is the God of the living and not of the dead. What that means is not that those people are personally, consciously existent now, but I think that there is, if you like, an immortal spirit for the righteous, that God remembers who they were as persons And at the resurrection of the body, and all existence in the Bible, including the existence of God himself, is of a corporeal, of a bodily nature, we will stand again, as we are now. Now that is a great comfort, that I will be personally saved, but it's also a great challenge. Because who is actually happy with who they are right now? Sure, we shall be changed, as we read in 1 Corinthians 15, but that change is not going to involve the obliteration of personality, the obliteration of character, because then salvation would not be personal. Duncan will not be saved if I am simply so rearranged at the last day that I'd be totally unrecognizable to you. So it's a very challenging and sobering idea. You know, we shall see or recognize Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of God. They will be there, and we will know them, not by face, not by what they look like, but by personality, by character. So then, this name that we will be given, as I say, is very personal, and it is us. It is the summation of all our history and character and experience in this life. And that is, again, a very challenging idea, because although it seems that life sort of crawls along and, you know, one day is much like the day before it, and cotton wool clouds kind of float across the sky, in fact, God is at work very intensely. And what is going on in our lives is actually of eternal moment. It has an eternal consequence, because the person and personality that we are allowing to be forged now is who we shall eternally be. But, as I say, it is in that sense unknowable by anybody else apart from yourself and Jesus, because this is the name given that nobody else actually knows, knowing in the Hebraic sense of relating to. And you think of how Job says that, okay, after I'm dead, worms will eat this flesh, and yet in my flesh I will see God, who clearly believed in the resurrection of the body, whom I shall see for myself and not another. And I think that little phrase, and not another, I think the idea is that my relationship with him shall be totally personal. My eyes will see him and his eyes will see me, and not anybody else. In the sense that nobody else can quite enter into what that catching of eyes between God and myself at the last day is going to mean. Nobody else can enter into that. That's why our real spiritual being is called in Peter the hidden man. And it's hidden from other people's view, not to God's view, of course. And this same idea, I think, of an unenterable relationship between Jesus and us personally is there in 1 Corinthians, where Paul says, he that is spiritual discerns all things about God, yet he himself is discerned of no man. And I often wondered quite what that meant, that he that is spiritual discerns all things about God, yet he himself is not discerned by man. Because the he himself appears to be the spiritual person. The spiritual person is not discerned by others. I wonder if it simply means that the spiritual self, what Peter calls the hidden man, is not in fact discerned by other people. So then, Jesus is going to confess our name before God. We read in Revelation 3. He will confess our name. He calls his sheep, he says in the parable in John 3, by name, and they know his voice. Each sheep hears a slightly different intonation of voice and will go at that call. That's why he can take individual note of each sheep, and he leads them on an absolutely personal level. So then, this is the significance of us being named and him confessing our name before the Father. Because we have an individual name, we are not simply numbers, we are not simply a bunch of people who are going to be saved en masse. We are individuals, and our personal name, and as I say, that summarizes all that I am, all that you are as a person, that is what is known by Jesus, that is what is shared by him with God. And so there will be this totally individual aspect of our relationship with him forever, just as there is in this life. And so the Jesus that I understand is maybe not going to be quite the Jesus that you understand, because I'm going to see different aspects to him, and you likewise are going to see different aspects to him that I don't see. You're going to have a different experience with him. Of course, he is the same Jesus. It's not that he shows one face to you and one face to me. It's not that he operates one set of principles to you but another set of principles to me. Not at all. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying that just as a person can have a relationship with one person and yet a relationship with another, and those two relationships are structured very differently and focus on very different aspects, then I can see how that is going to cause some people who don't quite get this, it's going to cause them a lot of angst if their idea is, no, we all believe the same doctrine, the same theology, and it's one and the same Jesus, and if you misunderstand him and you get him different the way I do, well then either I'm right and you're wrong, or the other way around, and I have to think that I'm right and you're wrong. No, this is not that. This is missing the whole point of personal relationship. He may reveal different aspects of himself to you and reveal different aspects of himself to me. Now that is not him being deceitful. It doesn't mean that there's two people called Jesus. Not at all. There is one Jesus. But no single human being can surely be so arrogant as to say that I know everything there is to know about Jesus. I've got him absolutely tracked. I know everything about his mind. I know exactly all the ins and outs of his ways of acting and how he is as a person. No, you don't. And again, this requires humility to grasp that, of course, you don't. Really, when you think about it, who are we to imply that? But the wonder is that we shall see him as he is. And that, as he says here, he will give us a name that only him and I know, that no one else knows. And that is personal between us absolutely forever.